Frank Wells and Barry Diller taught me to act like Caesar's wife. That is good practical advice for all executives, but especially public company executives, and doubly appropriate for executives in the public eye. In addition to the sermon on ethics, he warned Ovitz about his deal-making. The deal is not the essence of Disney. Operations are the thing. The deal is a means to an end, to get television series made, movies made, theme parks built, consumer licenses awarded, talent connected. But the deal cannot take the lead. I feel about acquisitions exactly as I feel about everything else. We don't need them. We don't need the overly expensive movie or television show. We do not need the actor who has priced himself out of the market. We do not need the acquisition that, even if we feel it fits strategically, is economically ridiculous. I guess what this letter states is all so obvious. But it did take me many years to be able to even state the obvious. What better time to put the thoughts in writing as we begin this new chapter in our lives? Let's find some time to discuss the future. Michael. Eisner later explained the letter by remarking that Ovitz was running like crazy, trying to do everything, working, you know, 17 hours a day. I was excited about how interested and committed he was, but I wasn't getting his attention completely on some of the things that I thought were important. And therefore I thought by writing a letter that basically complimented him and told him that I was excited about his being in the company, but that these should be things that he should be looking at. Eisner maintained that Ovitz never replied to the letter or even acknowledged receiving it, though Ovitz later testified that they discussed it on numerous occasions. He was nonetheless oblivious to the possibility that the letter was in any way a criticism. He said he found it incredibly helpful and very supportive of me. This is the kind of instruction that I had asked for on that August walk and previously, and I thought he was being wonderfully responsive. At the same time, Ovitz didn't agree with parts of the memo, especially Eisner's professed opposition to acquisitions, which was, in any event, hard to reconcile with his multi-billion dollar acquisition of ABC. "We had some spirited discussions about publishing and recorded music," Ovitz recalled, two areas where Ovitz was supposedly in charge and where he felt it was essential to grow through acquisitions. Oblivious to Eisner's mounting suspicions and concerns, Ovitz plunged into his new responsibilities, confident that by sheer dint of hard work and enthusiasm, he could carve out a role for himself despite the overt hostility of people like Litvak and Bollenbach, and the passive resistance of Roth. Ovitz surpassed even Katzenberg's legendary work habits, arriving early, spending 12 hours at the office each day, including Saturdays and Sundays. And like Katzenberg, he always seemed to be doing two or three things at once, frequently interrupting meetings to use his cell phone, arriving late or leaving early, canceling appointments at the last minute. This was pretty much business as usual in the Hollywood of CAA, but at Disney, where suspicion and resentment of Ovitz were already rife, every slight was tallied, and most were reported to Eisner. In one incident, Ovitz managed to alienate both Bob Iger and Steve Bornstein, the head of ESPN. He'd told Iger he wanted to know everything about ESPN, and asked to meet Bornstein.